welcome into a round and about, a public affairs program that you hear every weekend on these radio stations. Yours truly, Nell Reagan, you're a hostess, and today we're just delighted to have Lee Kessler with us. And Lee is a television actress, screenwriter, playwright, and stage director, and her career in Hollywood and New York spans 35 years and includes dozens of guest starring roles in episodic TV, miniseries, and movies of the week. And she has recurring roles in the series Hill Street Blues and Matlock, and was submitted for Emmy nomination twice for her starring roles in the movie Collision Course and the ABC special Which Mother Is Mine. She co-starred with Peter O'Toole in the movie Creator. And Lee became the first actress in the world authorized to portray the legendary diarist Anais Nin. Is that right?
Yes, you got it right.
when her play, The Parish Years, was produced in New York and Los Angeles with a subsequent tour on the West Coast, she also directed the West Coast premiere of A.R. Gurney's Who Killed Richard Corey. And since the publication of her suspense movies, White King and the Doctor and White King Rising, Lee has made numerous radio and TV appearances discussing the book's relevance to the outcome of the war on terror, and has spoken often to book signings and private readings in New York and Los Angeles. In addition, during the development of her entertainment industry career, she has become a successful entrepreneur, a pioneer in internet commerce, and today owns an international internet business which operates throughout the United States, and she currently resides in Montana, way out west. Lee, good morning to you.
Good morning, Nell. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, after all of those things that you have done in your lifetime and still doing, I'm just really, you know, I'm impressed.
Well, thank you.
But today, let's talk about some serious things that you present in some of your writings. And, you know, what really puzzles me is the fact that you're an actress, you're a screenwriter, author, whatever, but you're very, very interested in espionage and terrorists. And how in the world did you, how did you get involved in that?
Well, it wasn't intentional. After 9/11, I think, like almost every one of us in this country, knew that our lives had changed and that we're in a real fight here. And I was looking to see, how could I contribute? Is there something that I as a citizen could do? And as we started coming up, especially towards the 2004 elections, I was witnessing at a time when America should have been more united than ever, we were becoming more divided. But also that the nature of the rhetoric was so shrill and harsh that I recognized that that would be symptomatic of a fifth column. Now, that's a military term, meaning a force inside a country that is designed to break the solidarity of a country so that the other forces could attack. And I said, well, my goodness, at that point I remembered that right after 9/11 I had read that the Israelis back in the 90s attempted to warn us about one man in particular, a man by the name of Ayman al-Zawahiri, who's an Egyptian psychiatrist and doctor, and that he's the mastermind of Al-Qaeda. And they had told us that they could never figure out what he was doing. Their best analysts couldn't figure him out, didn't know what he was going to do next, and that he was going to kill a lot of people. So I thought, well, I have had the opportunity in my career to play real characters many times. Maybe they're not analyzing him as an individual, as an actor would if they were going to play him. So I did a backstory character analysis on the mastermind, the real life mastermind of Al-Qaeda, uncovered a few things, and I was looking, actors now look to create in a character, you find the driving motivation of the character, and if you get that right, you'll be able to explain and justify everything they've done in their past, but you would also be able to identify what they might do in their future, because it'll come from their goals, just like our actions come from our goals. Mm-hmm. So I identified this guy's driving motivation, and then I began to project for myself, if that's true, then I'm going to see certain things playing out in the world, and it wasn't long before I started seeing them in real life, and it's at that point that I realized, oh dear, how do I communicate this? I'm not in the intelligence community. I'm not in counterterrorism. And so I chose to write a story that's based and inspired by actual events, but it is through the point of view of this man so that we as Americans can come to understand his viewpoint, his intentions, and what he's likely doing to us, and that became the books. And then as time went on, because I was writing into the future, it started to happen, and some of our real-life circumstances that we're dealing with now were already in those books. That's what caught the attention of the counterterrorism community.
And
wild.
You figured all that out yourself, and you became the mind of that Al-Qaeda
yes.
Representative.
Yes.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
So you started sort of becoming him for a little bit to see how he would sort of figure things out.
Yes, that's the actor's discipline. You have to be the other person. If you've ever watched a movie, a biography of a person, and sometimes the critics will say that so-and-so is that character rather than they were good as. They'll say they are. That means they were so believable.
It made it easier for you because you are an actress anyway.
Yes, exactly. But I'd also played real people. That movie Collision Course, one of the first things I ever did was playing Margaret Truman in a movie that had to do with the MacArthur and Truman conflict. So I'd had that opportunity. And, of course, you read about the play on East Nin. But through my career, there's been numerous opportunities, actually, to play real people. It's a little bit different of a discipline for an actor.
Yeah. Have you ever done soap operas?
Yes, I did a year on Days of Our Lives playing a very evil psychiatrist.
Recognize the name. I'm not a soap opera addict, but occasionally I do get to watch, occasionally, not very often, but I was wondering about that. You know, there's striking similarities in the scenarios you designed in actual events. What are the ones that stand out in your mind the most? Because, you know, we've had so many terrorists actual attacks, but yet there have been some that were initiated and weren't carried through. But what are some of the ones that stand out in your mind that you were actually thinking about that could happen?
Well, the ones that are catching the attention of the intelligence and counterintelligence community, where they're actually asking me, really probing, because they don't know how I could have known this without being deep in intelligence or how I could have figured out something like this. But one of them for sure is on everybody's minds right now, and that has to do with the south of the border situation. Because in the opening chapters of the new book, which came out in January, but I had already written these chapters back about 2.5 years ago, I had identified that it would be very likely that Al-Qaeda would combine with Venezuela, Cuba, Panama, and the FARC out of Colombia, the drug cartels out of Colombia, in an attempt to take over and stage in Mexico. And that is what we're looking at down there now. In recent months, since the book has been published, Americans have not only their attention on the border and immigration and all of that, but we're well aware now that the terrorists are coming across that border, not only the drug cartels, but there does in fact appear to be a conspiracy of those countries. And it is a very, very dangerous move that would have been masterminded by this guy. And that's one of them. Certainly the killing of our CIA agents, I think had people really understood the opening first chapter of my first book, when you come through Zawahiri's mindset, one would have realized that he would use double agents, and it was one of his double agents that took down our CIA agents. So it's just been an interesting time to be writing almost into the future and then having things like that play out.
Well, what do you think about the incidents of terrorism now that the president has said, okay, we're bringing the troops home, and within a year we're going to be totally out of that, the Middle East. And, you know, you hear this all the time, and I hear it every time you sit down to a conversation that has anything to do with what the state of the union's in and what the terrorism's going to, what's going to be happening as far as terrorism is concerned. But do you think that there's going to be more terroristic acts now that we're out of the Middle East or going to be out of the Middle East? Or is it just going to play out like it has before? There's always going to be espionage and all of this sort of stuff. But what about the actual terrorist attacks here in the United States?
I think those are going to continue to play out because they're on a game plan anyway. Personally, on that issue that you mentioned, I think that if one really is understanding the mindset of an actual enemy, they wouldn't give them a signal of when you're going to leave the field absolutely. It's almost a propaganda victory for them. That militarily, they can wait. And this is primarily a propaganda warfare, economic and propaganda. And they're cleaning our clock on PR and propaganda. But it gives them, from their point of view, I think if our president had looked at that in the way of how is that going to be viewed from the Mideastern point of view, or from an enemy's point of view, it looks like, okay, we waited out. We've put them to a stalemate. They're then going to back out of our territory. So they don't have an incentive to engage as much right then. They can marshal their forces, continue their training. I think it's a tactical mistake to do that. That's just in my opinion. Now, I'm not a general, but I think there are probably a lot of generals who would agree with me on that.
You mean a tactical mistake by pulling out from...
Announcing that you're going to pull out.
There's
absolutely, it was appropriate. I mean, what the news didn't convey to America really was that we had won with our objectives in Iraq, and I'm not certain the American citizen really understands the huge victories that we have had there. My books, I'll lay those out. I mean, there are tremendous insights into what went on inside Iraq and where were we actually victorious. But announcing exactly when you're leaving any battle, I just don't know if that's ever been done in history. And unless there was some covert propaganda reason to do it, which, of course, I wouldn't be privy to me that seems like a mistake to do that because I don't think we have understood as well as we could or should the viewpoint of that particular enemy and what they would view as a victory.
Well, do you expect that possibly there's going to be so many horrible acts against the people there in the Middle East, now that we have brought some troops out, is it going to be harder for that government, or what do you think?
I don't know as it will be harder. I believe we've had a good length of time to train them up. It appears that they're handling their situations pretty valiantly. I think their issue is, are they as a culture that's diverse, you know, with the three different groups that tend to war with one another, is the greater good of their nation going to carry them through the hard times that they have? But, you know, America had a hard start, too. After our revolution, it was a long time before we resolved some of the critical issues of conflict in the U.S. as well. So, you know, they've got a road to go. I hope they make it.
I do, too.
Yeah.
The thing is that worries me is that possibly another Saddam Hussein. And there you go. Bin Laden's still out there.
Yeah.
So what you going to do about that? I mean, people who come in like Saddam Hussein, who want to rule and who want to be a dictator, and that's what I worry about.
Yeah, understood.
And after we've tried to clear the way, and now what's going to happen after that?
Well, I'm an optimist, but I've also made I study and watch certain cultures, and there's an interesting thing about freedom, that once people get a taste of it, and they actually do start to participate in their government, and the Iraqis had to participate at the risk of their lives, and they have done it, and they've done it through numerous elections now, that I doubt if they would willingly and easily go back under the thumb of a dictator. Only, you know, if they get to fighting too much and a divide and conquer, if a divide and conquer strategy works with them, it could happen again. But if they will work united, they should make it. I'm more concerned about the division that's happening in the United States because I know this enemy and I know he's playing with our minds. He's actually using an old Soviet strategy to bring America down from within. And that meant a Trojan horse placed here in design to compromise education, bring religion under attack, assault the family unit, really get us to destroy ourselves. And that's what I have more of my attention on.
That's what's happening too, Lee, if we're not careful. And you see this more every day. As you mentioned, They're destroying our culture, little bits and bites at a time, and we're doing it. We're letting ourselves be. We're eating away at ourselves, in other words.
Exactly. Well, that's why I wrote White King Rising, which is the new book, because it's the story of how that's being done to us and how to win.
Okay, White King Rising, what is that? Tell me a little bit about Doctor and White King Rising.
Okay, well, the first book was White King and the Doctor. The Doctor is the nickname in the Al-Qaeda community, one of the names for Ayman al-Zawahiri. The White King is a chess piece. And the two Americans, the CIA analyst and the Grandmaster Chess Champion, who's 18 years old when he's called up to duty, if you will, it's a chess piece, but it has a significance to us. And the mystery of the first book is, what games is this doctor actually playing with us? What sequence? How are we succumbing? Where are we being attacked? And putting them together, and who exactly is the White King? And then the second book carries forward with a further clarification on that White King, but how we as a people win. Because the second book, which is the one we're out with now, is the story of that Trojan horse. How was it placed here that we embraced it, and how were the agents of the belly of that Trojan horse, so to speak, able to infiltrate every one of our institutions, compromising them? And these two young kids figure it out, and they figure out a way to reverse it so that we don't succumb. It's actually a very hopeful book. And when people read it, they go, my Lord, I think this is true. And I actually see how I could fix this now.
Well, Lee, when are you going to do a movie with this book?
Well, we're very close on a movie, a major motion picture on the first book. I can't announce names, but we are very, very close. I have an excellent producer-manager team, and I believe that we will have a deal within a month on the first book. Because they're suspense novels, they'll play like very, you know, fast-paced, interesting stories.
Well, aren't you under suspicion all the time with the CIA and the FBI and all of that kind of stuff? Don't they suspect that you're kind of doing something undercover?
Well, I could be. I mean, I've had some interesting conversations and questionings that are a little more, feel a little bit more like an interrogation because of the accuracy of it. And what I have found is that when they comment or send word to me, they say, we cannot tell the difference between the fact and the fiction in these books. These books seem totally real to me and to us. And if that's the case, that's where they assume that I have to have somehow been deep undercover, and I'm not. I'm completely independent from that community, and I've explained, I said, look, my only credibility is that I have no connection at all to your world, that I did this by independent analysis, and if I can look through a different set of eyes and connect the dots differently, revealing a different picture, so could you. You just need to change the viewpoint, connect the dots differently. So I think they get it after that, oh no, she's real, she's the actress, she doesn't have anything to do with this, but boy, she really looked at it from a different angle.
You know, it'd be nice if all of us could do that, but, you know, we're so busy in our fast-forward world that we really don't sit down and take note of really what's happening in our country. We rely on the ones that, so-called ones we put in office, and doggone it, I'd like to get a few of them out of there.
And we rely upon media, too, and you'll see in my books that they're very complicit here. And because we then take what they have said, it's not necessarily true, but even if there's truth in it, we're taking their evaluation with it. And it's just, we're able enough as a people. Americans are very bright, and we're very creative, and we're able enough, if we were to just look and have to kind of remove the filter of some of our prejudices, but just look at situations, and through a different set of eyes, we can see a different picture. That's all I did. I was helping, through a story, guide the reader to look at the same set of circumstances they've been looking at, but from a different angle. And when they do, as I say, a picture emerges, and I, with the readers 100% who have responded, say, my Lord, now that I finished this, I think this is true, and when I turn on the TV, I can see it now. I can see this in life now. It's kind of like, how long has that pink elephant been in the living room, you know?
I got to have that book.
Yeah, I'll see that you get it.
I have your book.
Yeah.
But you know what really amazes me, Lee, is the fact that we have not been able to find Osama bin Laden. And we've You get this all the time, and I get it all the time. We sent a man to the moon or men to the moon, and we can't find this man. What's the deal with this? Why cannot we find this renegade?
Well, a couple of things. My own personal viewpoint is that he died in December of 2001, but I didn't write the books that way. I said, if, however, he is alive, I believe that he would have been moved into Iran. And so I placed him in both of my stories in Iran, and it's quite a shocking segment of the book. And Zawahiri I placed in an even more shocking place, hiding in plain sight in a free country. But recent intelligence is revealing that we do think now that bin Laden is, in fact, in Iran. And that was another one of the things that was catching people's attention of, good Lord, you know. She put him in Iran.
You know, I wonder if he's alive because he had... I think he had failing kidneys there for a while.
Yes, and...
So he could be very sick or very ill or not even alive.
Well, and under the control of Zawahiri. Zawahiri is a very ambitious man by my research. He is fully capable of pulling the trigger on one of his own cohorts. And I think he uses bin Laden when he needs him, and then Zawahiri is just, you know, going straight forward on his own game plan.
Well, when are we going to have a covert operation and get him?
Well, I don't, you know, I'm not inside the government, but I suspect that's already happening.
Well, listen, what about this Fort Hood shooting?
Well, ironically, the day that we were doing the pre-launch on the new book, White King Rising, that shooting occurred, and it is almost an exact scenario of one of the chapters in the book, because... part of the Soviet strategy was a form of remote mind control, and through the use of pharmaceuticals and drugging in our society, but it is possible to recruit and create a would-be suicide person, and especially a shooter. Certain medications will produce violent behavior. We're seeing that more and more with workplace shootings and school shootings and the Fort Hood shooting. That was definitely a terrorist attack, now definitely linked to Al-Qaeda, and that would be a full-blown example of the use of a mind control on one individual to cause a shooting. I'm more concerned that Zawahiri has figured out how to launch a medicine chest attack on us in the United States because we have become so drugged as a culture.
Oh, don't mention it. That is scary.
Yeah.
You're right. We are a drug culture.
Yeah.
And that could happen. Oh, man.
Yeah, he has a background in pharmacology, and he clearly understands what the Soviet doctors, Pavlov and so on, it's the stimulus response nature. If they can get us all in turmoil mentally, if anyone can get you mentally in turmoil to the point that you draw conclusions and everything from that portion is stimulus response, you know, I say yes, you say no, you know, it's kind of knee-jerk. Anytime we find ourselves in a knee-jerk reaction, a mind control guy has gotten us. We just need to step back, calm down, take a look at the situation, and make a rational conclusion. But it's all more and more stimulus response. And in, unfortunately, with that guy in Fort Hood, that is a great example of how you can turn somebody into a shooter.
Well, listen, Lee, I want to thank you so much for being on Around and About today. Keep writing those books. And the one that you're going to be wanting to buy is White King and the Doctor.
The new one, White King Rising, they can go to whitekingrising.com if they want more information on both books.
All right. Thank you so much, and God bless, and stay well.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.